might not necessarily come about at the beginning, but the more you think about it, hopefully it'll come across. It's quite how complicated reading really is. And it's something that comes quite naturally to most people once they've got past the age of, you know, whatever, 7, 8 or something like that. But I really, really, every day I do more and more research into it, appreciate quite... I can't even quite understand how children do it sometimes. And we do research into it, and we have children in our lab who come in and do studies with us when they're 5, 6, 7, and they're able to do this, and they pick up the skills over time, and it's so complicated that I just can't really understand it. So I'm going to start with a little game, because I always find games quite fun. So brought a whiteboard. It's going to make my life a lot easier. So the language that I think is the most difficult to learn, and well done for doing it, is English. English is an incredibly difficult language in many respects. And one of my favourite ways in which I think that it's a difficult language is quite how translating scribbles on a page, letters that we know, into sounds. And my favourite four letters in the English language are O, U, G, H. O-U-G-H, my favourite set of four letters. Has anyone hazard a guess how many ways you can pronounce O-U-G-H? Oh, you're closest. You're on 8.
9.
9 is 9. There are 9 ways in British English anyway. I mean, the Americans don't have quite so many, but they... took away all the fun ones, purely for the purpose of destroying this whole speech. So there are 9 ways of pronouncing O-U-G-H in English. And the little game I'd like to play is I'd like to see if we can work out how many people can think of in one go. Some are more obscure than others, some more obvious, but I'm more than welcome to.
As thorough and through.
Good, good.
And ought.
Oh, these are good. I'm liking this.
Any other bits?
Enough.
Rough. Plough. Ooh, this is good.
Doe.
Oh,
that's very good.
Trough.
Have you got enough, sir?
Enough.
Enough.
Yeah.
Have we been thorough enough?
Not yet. Okay, right. I might return. Those are the ones I've got so far. So.
What about hiccup?
Hiccup. Excellent.
Swell.
Ow, ow, we've got plough. We've got plough from behind. They're on 7.
What's that?
Rough.
Yeah, rough.
We've got enough, haven't we?
Oh, we've got enough. Oh, yeah.
Have you got thorough?
Sorry.
Have you got thorough on there yet?
Thorough.
Thorough's at the top.
Through.
Through. We've got through there.
Though.
Through. Oh, through. Oh, big problem, yeah. Through. Ooh, that's fine.
Thought.
Or somewhere, yeah. Ought, yeah. I must admit, the 9th one's a bit mean. That's me being a bit mean. The 9th is the, Loch from Northern Ireland. Yeah, I know, just to throw it in there. It's still the UK. So there are 9. There are 9. And so there are 9 different ways of pronouncing 4 letters. And this, to me, I had it shown to me once, and I think it's summed up pretty well. Quite what a good job we've all done for learning to read English. Because it's a difficult game, and things that are written on the page are not necessarily how you would pronounce them. And obviously we learn language a lot earlier than we learn how to read. That happens, you know, far, far, far earlier. And actually there's proof that sort of when babies come into the world, they can actually still start to understand sounds that they've heard while they were in the womb. And we know that actually that people can pick these things up, but reading is another game completely, and you have to wait a little bit longer before you work that out. And so what people like me who are researching reading try to work out is how does this process work, and how do we get from the stage of little squiggles that are on the page, so you know, these don't really mean anything unless you understand how the language works, how do we get from that stage to being able to read a novel and understand the concepts that are being expressed in there. And of course, it's quite a big process. So you've got to, first of all, take all these individual things, you've got to make them into words. You take those words, you put them together, and they obviously form sentences, and you have to understand the way that the what we call the syntax, which is sort of the structure of the language, and the way that you put words together. You have to put them in a certain order, otherwise they're not going to work. If you put them in a different order, they can change things completely. For instance, where you put only in a word can completely change the meaning if you put it at the beginning or the end or something, wherever you put the emphasis. Makes a big difference. You have to understand, obviously, the meaning of each of these individual words when you put them together in order to appreciate what they're trying to say. And you also have to understand the context in which they're written as well. So, for instance, if you were you received somebody's job application and it had references attached to it, and you were expecting some glowing reference from somebody, it said, "John Smith is very good at making tea." And that was the end of the reference. You'd be able to infer accordingly that doesn't really bode well for that person's character. And you can infer that despite the fact that what is explicitly written doesn't say anything of the sort. In fact, the person would be deeply unsuitable for the job. So you have to do a lot of work when you're reading, and it's a very seamless process. And what I'm keen to do is to break down that seamless process and make it much more difficult for people, which, apologies for anyone who takes part in my study, because that's exactly what I do, is I make a really easy process quite difficult. So the thing about reading is that it takes a lot of cognitive power, a lot of thought power, and you break it down into these steps, and you actually start to think about that fact that it's not easy. It's not easy, and how do people do it? And one area that I'm particularly interested in is the overlaps that happen between reading and what we sort of popularly sort of see as memory. And memory is again something that's quite complicated, but it seems quite seamless. I mean, we're all able to remember things that have happened maybe the day before, maybe the week before, the years before, or something like that. And it's not something that we particularly make a big deal of thinking about. But again, it's a complicated process. And, for instance, our memory isn't perfect. We often like to think that it is, and that we've remembered things fine. We often do things like we trust eyewitnesses in court cases. We say, well, so-and-so saw this person, they were probably wearing a black hoodie or something like that. And we trust these cases. But actually, psychologists have done a lot of research into this and has found that when it comes to people's memories, they're not perfect in the slightest. It's really easy to slip little things into people's memories just by saying the right thing. It's quite useful. It works pretty well. Just sway the conversation the way you want it to go, and people will remember. But people's memories are not this perfect photographic thing that we often think that they are. And so I'm quite interested in the crossovers between these two things, because they're both incredibly useful skills, and they're both things that we really need in our day-to-day life. And so what we're going to talk to you a little bit about this evening, just briefly, is about some of the research that's been done about reading and memory, how the two cross over, and how we understand what these processes are and how we actually are able to do them. So a lot of the work that's taken place in this area has been looking at what we sort of usually call short-term memory. So these are things that happen that you need to be able to remember, events or sentences or something that have happened within the last 30 seconds or so. That's generally the usually accepted sort of boundary, but it's not quite as clear-cut. Actually, that's the first rule of psychology. In any sort of psychological experiment, nothing's ever clear-cut. I mean, like, I suppose there are other sciences, you take, I know this is hardly hardcore sort of chemistry, but if you took a kettle and boiled it every day, you would find it would probably boil at about 100 degrees or so. Psychology, you bring 100 people in one day to do a study, and they do it, and you get one result, and the next day it's completely different. Bane of my life. But it's a recognised thing, and I mean, it's you get very sort of noisy results, very noisy data. And that's just because we are complex human beings. That's flattery in its finest form. We are complex human beings, and it's not quite as exact, and you can't rely on people to do quite the same thing. So a lot of the descriptions we use are a little bit blurred, but we'll go for now with sort of 30 seconds of saying, right, anything within the first 30 seconds, that's short-term memory. So a lot of research has been done, especially over the last 60 years or so, into short-term memory and trying to find out how it is that people remember things and what we really mean when we say memory and we're trying to use that. And so if you're thinking in terms of short-term memory, a lot of the tests have been sort of things where you read a series of numbers out to people and you get them to read them back to you. And it all sounds a little bit artificial, but I mean, it's the sort of thing that you actually might do. So you have to remember phone numbers. You know, you walk across from somewhere, you go, okay, what's the number? 271329, yeah.
912.
And you get muddled up. And it's quite easy to do. I mean, it's perfectly reasonable. And it's quite easy to see how memory can play a role within your reading ability. So you have to remember or drag out from your memory many things when you're trying to read something that's on the page. So, for instance, when you get to the end of a sentence, you need to remember what was said at the beginning. And even within each word, you need to sort of extract from your longer-term memory what these words mean. So I'm going to just rub this off. I'm going to give you an example of the sort of sentence I treat my beloved participants to. They always leave not quite as happy as they arrived.
Nick, would you like to come and hold it,
please? Yeah, that might help.
You sure you don't want to come sit down? Come to the back, do come, there's plenty of space.
Okay, right. So I give you. Yeah, I enjoy this. It's fine.
Will,
okay,
so Will, push it against the wall, it'll be much more stable.
Yeah,
just hold it steady for him.
I tend to give people sentences that are a little bit like this one, and I'll read it out so there's no worries, but I give people sentences like this. Don't berate my lack of punctuation yet. So, I give people a sentence a little bit like that. So that means, while Anna washed, the baby played on the bed. And these sort of sentences involve a little bit of thought, a little bit of sort of second guessing in that. The point of them is to try to extract how people read things. I mean, how do people actually gather a sort of interpretation of what's going on from some words that are written on the page. Now, the way that people normally read these is that they'll read it and they'll go, well, Anna washed the baby. Yes, it was an image of the baby washing. I haven't got any children. well, Anna washed the baby. And then they get the word played, and then they're stupefied. Then you get to the point where you're thinking, well, okay, what's going on here? And this is admittedly a fairly artificial example because we all know that what you really do is that. It's a bit of comedy. But I'm not going to do that. And what this really tells us about is the processes that people go through when they're actually going to reading. And so what we find is we give people these sentences, fine, easy enough. And you'd think, well, people can probably understand them, they can probably appreciate what's going on. And they work out that Anna's there washing herself, and the baby is simultaneously playing on the bed. That's fine, nice and simple. But you then ask people questions, and you say, right, okay, did Anna wash the baby? And you find quite often that 60-70% of people, 70% of the time, people will say yes. They'll give the answer yes, incorrectly. And you think, okay, all right, they just haven't really sort of understood. They haven't really read it properly or something like that. So you ask the same people, albeit on a different question, a different item, did Anna wash herself? And they say yes. So people seem to have this idea, I could mime this, but it's pretty horrific, that Anna is washing herself and the baby simultaneously. They seem to be able to hold these two images without even recognising the fact that there's a big conflict between them. So they've got Anna washing the baby playing on the bed, you know, all these things happen at the same time, and there's water everywhere. It's terrific. And so what we try to sort of like appreciate from this, we all want to take away from it is, okay, well, how do people do this? I mean, how is it possible? And you'd think that, you know, this is a fairly artificial example. Fine, you wouldn't necessarily get that. But you get people reading novels, and you can ask them about it, and they can make similar misinterpretations. It's quite common, and it can happen. I'll put your idea on misery and take that back. Thank you so much. That's a wonderful whiteboard helping. Exemplary. So what you find is that people are able to hold things that are incompatible simultaneously. And so people like me, who are inquisitive and want to know, you know, it doesn't really matter in the real world, but I mean, like, you know, what I'm really, really quite fascinated in is how people can do that. And one of the ways in which I personally try to explore this is by using a camera. And I track people's eyes while they're reading this. And it's a bit like sort of going to the opticians, you sort of sit on a bar, it's a little bit like this, and a camera sort of watches your eyes and it picks it up on the screen. And what you notice is that when the people are reading things like this, they go across and they go, while Anna washed the baby played, whoa, what's going on here? And sort of get sort of completely muddled up and can't work out what's going on. And they tend to retract and they sort of go back and they get back to washed and they go, oh, okay, I think I've got it. And then they come back and they keep going forward like that. And so it's a really fascinating tool because it can actually tell someone like me what people are almost thinking in real time, because we work on an assumption, and it is merely an assumption, but it's hopefully a valid one, that people generally are thinking about whatever it is that they're reading at any given time. And where memory comes into this is that we seem to find that when you put people under real pressure, especially if it's under time pressure or you give them more complicated sentences, or you give them more things to do at once, which is what I do. Again, real fun if you're planning on taking part in this. And I give people a second task to do at the same time. You find that this actually makes this process even worse, and people spend even longer rereading it and doing it. And the thought process behind it is that you need to hold these ideas concurrently in order to work out what's going on. So you've got to have this appreciation, right? Anna's over here. She's washing the baby there. No, she's not. Try again. She's over here washing herself. Baby's playing on the bed. But it takes a while to actually reach that point. And the sort of idea that we're coming towards sort of within this area in psychology is almost that people... It will be a bit unfair to say don't really care, but if you're sort of reading something and it's not necessarily that important, it's not sort of crucial to you know, your daily life, it might be a novel or something like that, people sort of reach an interpretation that works for them. So whatever their restrictions are, it works for them. And, you know, we're all under pressure for various things, time, stress. People sort of reach a sort of interpretation, and we've only got so many resources available. Our brain can only do so much. We like to think that it can do more. We like to think we can do a million things at once, but we can't. And so we sort of do enough given what we've got available to us. Now, unfortunately, that's where the Asian part of my research kicks in, because I'm doing a lot of work at the moment on what happens as you get older and the resources available to you aren't quite so good. That's the best way I can put it. I'm trying to find out, well, okay, what happens when you haven't maybe got these resources available? So you start off, you know, fresh-faced, and the 18-year-olds who take part in my study, that's fine. And they've got, they're great. They can remember everything. They can do all these things at once. And it gets, you know, that's the thing. And then time goes on, and it's, you know, and other things become priority, and you know, your brain... can't necessarily do exactly the same as it could before. And I'm interested to find out, well, okay, well, to what extent does that mean that your reading patterns change? And actually what I find in my research and what people have found in theirs as well is that your reading patterns change because you actually often can spend longer looking back, but you can often still actually miss the misinterpretation here, and you can still misread the sentence. And when you're asked afterwards, okay, what happened? Did Anna watch the baby? Yeah, she did. Yeah, that's what I thought she did. And this sort of changes over time, and as people get older. And so this comes to the sort of final bit that I really wanted to talk about, which was, well, okay, so we've got people getting older, and we don't think maybe they read quite as well. It's efficient, it's an efficient process, but maybe not as sort of as usefully as maybe you could in the past. We also have lots of people who have problems with reading. I mean, you get reading disabilities like dyslexia and the like, and these things are often also found to sort of tie in, and you find links with differences when it comes to memory. And when you give people memory tasks, we find that there are differences there. And so another thing that sort of vaguely interests me is finding out, well, okay, is there anything we can do about it? You know, it's all very well, you know, coming here and saying, well, okay, great. Your memory gets worse as you get older. Some people's memory isn't as good as others. Some people can't read as good as others. And that's all very well and good, but it's nice to be able to say also, well, okay, this is what we're going to do about this. It's fine. And you often find that, you know, people can come up with miracle cures, and people can kind of say, well, if you play this video game an hour a week, you'll suddenly find that your reading abilities improve. And sadly, it doesn't seem that it's quite as simple as that. And it's a very sort of, it all sort of gets quite muddled up. And it's all to do with the fact that, what I sort of said about 10 minutes ago, which is that no one really agrees on what we mean when we say memory. Memory is something that we all have, we all know what it is, we can sort of say what it is, we say, yeah, fine, we can remember stuff, that's okay, whatever. But nobody really agrees on exactly what it is. And some people think, right, okay, you've got this part of the brain that does this bit of memory, and this part of the brain that does this bit of memory. But other people almost want to sort of abolish the term sort of memory, and they don't really, especially sort of short-term memory, they don't want to see it as anything particularly important. And they see it more as kind of what we are using at any given time. So you can see your short-term memory not as, you know, that you've got this sort of box that you can go to whenever you want, and you can kind of like, you know, dig around in it and you can find out, you know, this is what I did on the 7th of June 2012, you know, and go through that. They instead say, well, okay, you've got all this stuff that's kept in your brain loosely, and whatever you're using at any given time, that's memory. That's fine. And they don't think, and they think that it's a bit of a difficult thing to say, well, okay, reading relies on memory, because they think that memory is a sort of key part of what actually reading is. And as I said at the beginning, what reading is extracting from squiggles on a page sounds, and from those sounds, it's extracting meaning, and then you take the meanings of all these things together, and you get the context, and you get what it's written in. And for all intents and purposes, there's one main way that's been determined for how to get better at reading. I'm going to write it down. I'll write it down just like this. This is thought to be the best way to get better at reading. Read more. That's generally considered to be the best way that you can sort of do it. Read more from more different sources and things like that. In the end, you know, if you can read, it's a useful skill. It's great to have. But it's a complicated thing, and it involves a lot of different things within the brain, and far more than, you know, because there's nothing to talk about tonight, and we can obviously discuss more. But the main thing is, reading is a complicated thing, and you need to have certain elements of memory to have that there, but you've only got so much available. And what we really are sort of like hopefully trying to find out now is how do people sort of like break through, and how do they sort of get to the ability to be able to read these things, despite it being quite a complicated process, especially in the language that we've got. And what we really find is that while we can't exactly say what we're talking about when we're on about it, we find that it's really a case that you develop these skills, that you can translate skills on a page, you remember what they are, and memory plays a really key role within that. And so basically the take-home message is that reading's great, it's really useful. And you sort of are quite, it's quite a privilege to be able to do it. That's good. So,
I think that's about it.
Yeah.